Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Commander and Coffee Podcast, where there's always something brewing. I'm Chris, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Billy and Y. In today's episode, we have a very special topic. We're talking all about Silicon Dynasty and the past event that happened for Eminence Gaming. And with us today is the champion of Silicon Dynasty, Ben. Ben, how's it going?
It's going well. It was a really fun event, and I'm happy to talk about it.
Sweet. Not only do we have Ben here, though, today, we also have the TO for the event, Mikey Holohan of Eminence himself. Mikey, how's it going?
It's going well. I think there's like an echo in this Discord we're recording in right now. It's just really big, lots of channels, but like not a lot of people. It's a little surreal.
I'm getting so hated on for my Discord.
I'm crying.
Because I love you. What can I say?
Well, one day you listeners will get to get into this Discord and see all of the hardships that Mikey puts me through on a daily. Before we get into it, I do want to mention I did have my two co-hosts, Billy and Jared, here today. Guys, how are you guys doing today?
Significantly better now that Mikey's here and ripping on you, and it's wonderful.
You enjoy this for today, because this is a one-time deal.
Wait, I'm not going to come be invited back? What's going on?
Maybe. We'll see.
I'll personally bring him back myself. I'll drag him back kicking and screaming.
I'm doing good. No one asked. I'm doing great.
I asked.
He just doesn't care about you.
Yeah, but it's like the vote is like 1-4, so it's like it feels empty.
That's fair.
Just like this Discord. Lots of similarities.
Jeez.
Look, this Discord has nearly doubled in quantity over the last like 15 minutes, so I don't want to hear it.
How dare you insinuate that I have friends?
I was going to say, all my friends are here. What are you talking about? Why?
Yeah, recording Craig is always there for me.
Absolutely.
He's the boss. All right. Well, enough making fun of my crappy Discord. Moving on to an event that was not crappy, Silicon Dynasty.
Hey, that was a really good transition. I'm proud of you for that.
Why do you gotta ruin the good ones? Why do you always ruin the good ones?
Because I gotta call out when you're doing well, Chris. Like, because there's a lot of times you can't transition well, and that was a good one.
We're being supportive, Chris. Jeez, we're just trying to help you out.
I survive on negative reinforcement. So anyways, so talking about Silicon Dynasty, obviously that was a great event held by the Eminence Gaming organization over in the West Coast side. One of the very largest CDH events that we had. And luckily enough, we again have the champion as well as the TO here to talk about it. So kind of to open it up, I wanted to get your thoughts on how you guys felt the event went overall for you in terms of how it was run, how running the event was, this, that, and everything else. So why don't you just give us a little insight as to how the event went.
From my point of view, it went really, really well. Their website is really easy to see pairings, and you don't have to roll who's going first. Everything was made very clear. The judges were doing a great job. As a player, it felt as smooth as it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, our experiences from Punt City kind of ran the same. Mikey, how about the difference between, you know, this event versus Punt City? Do you think it ran smoother? Do you think there was less hiccups? How did you think the event ran from running it as a TO?
There was like a couple small things that were all handled on the TO and judge side. Nothing like too crazy. I think overall Punt City went a little bit smoother, but I honestly attribute that mostly to the fact that Mike Bonney, our director, was at Punt City. Just not having him on the scene at Silicon just because he was busy. He just had a newborn, so he wasn't able to make the trip out. Me having to do all the tournament organization stuff as well as the stuff Mike usually does, which involves more of like coordinating with the hotel, making sure that we're doing well in the space and following all those types of rules. Like I had to kind of take on both of those roles. So it definitely led to things feeling a little bit more overwhelming on my side day of. But overall, I feel like everything went extremely smooth. All the players were super happy. We got a lot of good feedback. And I'm really happy that Mike's going to be able to make it out to Punt City too, because he's the reason why this all happens. Like, I know I'm the one who like had the idea for Eminence, but he really keeps us all moving, keeps up morale, and definitely his presence was missed at Silicon, and I think all the staff kind of felt that.
Yeah, well, kudos to you. It must be hard to combine all that and keep it all in one piece.
Yeah, so it's definitely a lot of work, but, you know, made sure to have a lot of quality judges on staff, or casters. Shauna and Adam did a fantastic job, and that was the first time they actually worked together on a live event. We do like the weekly streams where they co-host with each other, but this was their first time actually casting a major commander event, and I feel like they completely crushed it. Like, they did extremely well, and really excited what the future has to store for the two of them.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's actually what I wanted to comment on myself from, I obviously didn't go, but from an observer watching the entire 2 days of events, excuse me, it went very swimmingly. Like, the audio was great. The video was great. The only minor gripe that I had is there's a lot of dead air in between matches, which, I mean, that just comes with growing pains, you know? I know that you guys are going to be working on that very soon for different things, but, like, otherwise, everything was top-notch.
Yeah, there was definitely a huge stream upgrade from Punt City to Silicon. We just had a lot more equipment, and Adam put a lot of thought and care into, like, getting there the night before. Like, he was literally there. I think his flight landed in San Jose at like 11 p.m. and he was in the stream room until like 2 a.m. just trying to get things set up so we were ready. And then he was there bright and early making sure that everything was working and everything was properly set up. So Adam really made the stream happen. That was almost entirely on his end. He did a really good job, and we have a lot of good ideas going forward with Putt City, especially now that we have better cameras, better mics, because at Putt City, the stream wasn't the best, but it was mostly on us. We focused so much time into planning the event and everything. We didn't really put a lot of time into stream setup. So it was very much like a dad's garage setup, you know, where duct tape and random like cameras hanging that were like very, what's the word? They were hanging on by a thread, quite literally. So it was really good to see that all came together, and Punt City, we're definitely going to keep up that level of quality going forward.
Yeah. And that's one big thing with, Eminence Gaming in its entirety, not to like talk you up since you're here, but I mean, we mentioned this back when we talked to Mike Bonney, the care and the passion that you guys have for what you do really is noticed and really thanked by the community as a whole. We really appreciate that you want to put CEDH on the map from people who have been playing, myself and Chris and Jared a little bit more, all right, a little bit lesser than as long as Chris and I have been playing, but like we remember the dark times, we'll call them, when there was nothing. And now to have something and have an outlet and have a place to do that, you know, and no longer been the, oh, you're the pub stompers kind of thing. Now it's like, hey, we have our own play space. And like, from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
Thanks, I appreciate that. This has definitely been our little passion project, and it's grown exponentially very quickly. Like when Punt City sold out in about an hour, Punt City 2, that is, we were shocked. Like we were expecting it to take like a week and a half, like maybe 2 weeks, just lining up with like how our other events have sold. But just the support we've gotten from the community is just insane. Just the fact that we were able to sell out 128 seats that quickly and sold them out so fast that we actually had to increase the cap. It's now 160 players, was just really cool to see. Like I'm glad that we're offering the product that a lot of the players have been wanting in the community, and it's just been a lot of fun, and we're really happy with our team. We've really become like a little family. Like our general chat in the staff Discord is like pretty hilarious if you start to scroll through it. It's just the camaraderie and everything is just great. Like everyone gets along, people aren't afraid to speak up, and I think that's something that separates us from what other organizations is. Every time someone might be a little bit curt or short with you, it's not like after the event we need 2 hours to like talk about our feelings. It's like in the heat of the moment, we all have a job, we're getting things done. This was seen a lot with our judge staff and Adam, for instance. There's times where Adam's like, I need you to do like this, this, and this. And then like I came in the stream room at a wrong time. He's like, you need to leave right now. I'm focusing on something. I'm like, cool, that's fine. And the fact that we're able to just get things done and not everything is like a huge fight, even though someone might be like a little bit brash in the moment, I think is really conducive to our productivity, that we're just focused all. We all know that we're aligning, providing the best of them possible, and we're just not trying to get in each other's way and support each other best we can.
I think what it is from my perspective is like the structure of these events almost mirrors. It's like a parallel to that big classic draw to the local game store. And I mean, now that we see more remote events and, you know, people losing their card shops, it almost gives that kind of home away from home. Everyone is coming to these events as a destination, whether it be a physical event or a remote event. And I think you're just, yeah, you have that kind of accommodating nature that before, previously, was really only found in someone's hometown, essentially. I think you do a really good job at kind of making the new wave of that kind of space that people want to congregate, that new kind of social community.
Yeah, that's what it's about at the end of the day. We all like bringing people together, and we found a medium that we're all passionate about, being Commander, and it's been just great to see it grow and develop and seeing all the smiling faces at events.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see what the future holds. I think between Punt City and Silicon Dynasty, I saw a major just from my observations, a major upgrade, and kind of like pushing toward like the like SCG and like GP, like that gold standard that we've seen in Magic in the past. And I think you're progressing to, if not already at certain levels, in that high level of performance for our little CDH community. So it's really great to see.
Mm-hmm.
So looking into talking about Silicon Dynasty a little more, I really want to talk about like getting prepared for these events. And I want to start with Ben. As a competitor, what are some of your ways that you kind of prep and prepare for getting ready to go to one of these big events?
A lot of it is practicing with your friends and making sure that you're getting good practice in, where everyone's playing good decks. After the game, doing a review and thinking about what plays were important and what other choices you could have made and how they would have played out. I unfortunately did not get as much of this testing done as I would have liked. I was just busy coming up to the event, and so I'm not even listening to my own word. I do think that those kind of things are valuable, keeping statistics of how your games went and how cards are performing is really important. Then again, I did very little of that.
I just thought it was you top 16 in an event with a deck, you just run it back to the next one.
That's more or less. I did well at Punt City and infamously mulligan to one in the top 16. But at least I lost to my friend, Chris, who was in the first seat. So it sucked to lose like that, mulling to one, but at least I got to see a friend win, and I performed well. So running it back at this event was... And I performed even better. It was pretty lucky. I got very lucky in terms of like where my seeding were. I went first in a number of my games.
Anything that you might have learned about like from playing in both the events and doing well in both of these events?
I learned some things about the meta that I expect we're going to get into soon. But I also learned a little bit about my own play style, and learned that I have to be more... aware of what my exact lines are to win. Sometimes there were some really sneaky lines that I missed in the semifinals. I still won, but there wasn't better opening that I could have gone for on Alana's turn, and it's something to be more aware of, making sure that you use every opportunity you have.
Are we talking about the dress down line that you had there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I knew that I needed spells with the dress down in play and some without, and I didn't see the line of acting after it had sacrificed.
Yeah, it's like one of those things. I mean, the real big talk of that dress down line is actually with the slicer ruling. I don't know if you really want to get into much detail with it, but with the slicer ruling on that one, did you know it worked like that, or were you kind of like, well, let's just hope we don't die here?
I did not know it worked like that. This is the first time I've seen Slicer, was the previous day. And as soon as he called a judge and said, okay, this is an effect, not an ability, I instantly was thinking, oh, I should have known that. I am a level one judge. That is something that, like, I understand. I just didn't read Slicer well enough. And when reading new cards, you often make shortcuts in your mind about how they work. And sometimes the shortcuts you make are detrimental, and you skip some really important information. For example, that it's not being granted an ability, it's an effect that's just applied to the card.
Yeah, I've definitely run through, and I've been a level one judge before in the past, so I understand those hardships. That's why most of the time sometimes even in tournament, if you see people call a judge, the first thing we do is pick up the card to read the card, because we need to really understand what the wording is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really easy to miss this kind of thing, and I'm under a lot of pressure. I am playing against this deck that I never have played against. I don't feel bad that I missed it. It's life.
Magic's hard. Can't be perfect all the time.
Exactly.
Shocker, Magic, a hard game.
You combine the intensity of the complexity of Magic the Gathering with the way that the English language just happens to be, unfortunately, it's just all sorts of trouble happens.
Commas can be your friend.
Yeah. I was also... Slicer has a lot of weird interactions, and I was even talking to Max before day two. We were talking about some really weird interactions with it, and it's really... There's a lot of opportunities for weird things, like phasing it out during your turn, or playing Phantasmal Image to copy it. There are a lot of weird things.
How about you, Mikey? What did you get any type of learnings or takeaways from? Well,
as a TO,
I'll just say both events, Punt City as a TO. Yeah, you stole my transition. That's fine.
You ruin mine all the time. As a TO and as a player, any tips that you have for players that want to like come out to your events and participate and tips to do well?
Honestly, the biggest tip that I have is I know that Commander is generally played casually, and a lot of people at our events, this is their first competitive Magic experience, but just going over some of the more baseline game rules. For instance, a lot of the issues that we ran into at the event were people with like having cards in different double sleeves or not double sleeving their whole deck, things along those lines. So I think just the big thing going forward is trying to educate players a little bit more on some of these basic things that all of us who have backgrounds in competitive card games kind of just take as a given. Like for instance, someone else, they had like tokens in their deck that were the same sleeve as their deck and little things like that, that don't seem harmful, but are technically against the rules and can lead to hiccups if there's deck checks and things along those lines. So I think people would benefit just from, even if you mainly are a casual player, before you go to these events, just try to learn a little bit more about like deck regulations, things that little things like that that you should look out for. Like, I mean, for instance, at Punt City, the finals game, one of the people that made it, we literally had to resleeve their deck right before because the head judge was sitting next to him and noticed that not all the dual inner sleeves were lined up correctly. You know, little things like that just kind of cause hiccups throughout the day. As from like a meta perspective, it's just kind of like seeing things and not panicking. Like the Slicer deck, like I definitely think that deck is pretty good. And it's really interesting, like just hard stacks and then kill people with combat, and it has a pretty fast clock with the double strike. But it's just don't panic. Like I think a lot of people saw that and were just like, I don't know what this is, and either panicked and didn't know how to properly evaluate the card, or just like we're like, oh, I've never seen this before, and flat out ignored it. And both strategies are just recipes for failure. So it's just like calm down, pick up the card, read it. You're totally allowed to do that. Just ask your opponent, like, can I see your commander real fast? And things like that. Like it's just keep a cool head throughout the event. I saw a lot of people who like had good runs early and then they got nervous, or someone like they had like one bad game and just kind of got tilted into oblivion. So it's just keep a cool head, be prepared. It's a long day. Know that's a little bit of a different environment than casual, and just be ready for those hardships and like those additional rules that come with competitive play.
I also see that some of that being some player migration from other formats as well. If you're like a, you know, like a modern 60 card grinder or something like that. I mean, that's kind of been the hot topic just a few months ago, right? About Tim Necrom. That's kind of the word on the street anyway. So I think with a lot of the other format transplants, you're going to see more colloquially defined meta dominating decks.
To add on to what you said about Slicer, one takeaway that I had was people not adapting to what kind of game it was fast enough.
I agree.
And like one example was in the semifinals. Alana saw that we were having a slow, grindy game between me and Alana, and Ian as well is low on resources, so he's going to have to grind a little bit. And in a normal game like that, Imperial Seal for Rhystic Study is a totally good play. You'll get a Rhystic Study next turn and start drawing some cards off of it. But, and she realized this as soon as she made the play, that's not the right play in this kind of game because Slicer was putting a clock on the game. There was no possibility for us to have a long mid-range game.
Yeah, that's really true. Because
we would all die before that happened.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And like I said, it's just not panicking or completely just ignoring something that you haven't seen before. I see this all the time when I played in like larger online communities. Like if there was a commander that people didn't recognize, or say someone brought back, you know, like Arkham Daxum from way back when, people would just be like, oh, that can't be a real deck, I haven't seen it before, people don't talk about it. And then they die turn three because that's what Arkham does if you let them do their thing. So it's just kind of like people are playing decks for a reason, even if it's something that you don't recognize or typically see in the scene. Don't just write it off. Like take a second, think to yourself, like, what could this be doing? Like we saw a similar thing at Marchesa last year with Magda. Like I think Magda's like fine. I don't think it's anything special because it's very susceptible to removal and, you know, op agent kind of messes with it. But I think people just saw this commander that no one really respected or recognized, and they just let it do its thing. And the next thing you know, they're dying at instant speed because they removed the one piece locking them out of the game. Things like that. Just like taking your time to reflect. Like people aren't bringing blank cardboard necessarily to these events. If it's something that you haven't seen before, ask yourself some questions. Like, why is someone playing this? Like, what is the intention?
So kind of looking at talking about a lot of that weird stuff. Looking at like, you know, the Slicer decks, the Magda decks from the different decks. Any takeaways on the meta that kind of happened at Silicon Dynasty, Ben? Was it kind of what you expected going in? I know you said you didn't do too much testing, but was it kind of what you thought it was going to be, or was there a lot of variations to what you expected?
I expected more Grixis piles and partner pairings. I think that you saw that more at the higher tables in later rounds, where like those were kind of being filtered to the top. But I expected more people to know that those were some of the better decks going in, and to see that represent a larger portion of the field percentage-wise. And the truth is that for now still, it is a lot of these people are still coming from more casual backgrounds into CEDH, and you see a huge variety of decks. I remember at a previous tournament, one of the most, actually the most common deck was Yuriko, and that was really emblematic of that. We've moved past to that a little bit, so now the most common deck was, I believe, Timnacrom, which is, in my mind, one of the best decks, while Yuriko isn't. So I think that people are starting to make that shift towards better decks, but I expected it to have moved a little faster.
When you get people upgrading their decks or people changing decks, people entering their first tournament and trying to get in that mindset, and like I said, with people transferring formats, I think that if you're looking to decide on what deck you're playing, you're looking for accessible literature. And like I said, with the snowball, with more Grixis shells and just these popular decks getting more written about them, that kind of lends itself to more people coming in with those as their first decks. And then that kind of, you know, keeps that kind of dynamo turning.
Yeah, so you would say that it's going to increase from Pun City to Silicon Dynasty, and then moving even forward into the Cookout, we should expect to see more of those Grixis piles doing well.
Yeah, I think that will happen for like the early stages. But I think we're already starting to see more of like an actual meta form. Like, yes. Well, if you look at a lot of the top 16s from the tail end of like, or second half of 2022, you're seeing a lot more of like those Grixis piles, a lot more Timnacrom. And it's not to say that other decks are unplayable. It's just, I do feel that those are the stronger decks right now, or like your Najeelas, Winota. I think Teemer Pirates is another good example of a deck that's just like very clean and efficient. So even if it's not like, you have to look at the top 16 as a whole, not necessarily like, oh, Slicer made it. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. It's like, those decks will always have a place in the meta. Like, there's always going to be people playing them. It's just when you're starting to see, like, an actual tournament scene developing. Like, as Ben mentioned, when you get to the top tables, that's where you're seeing more of those Grixis piles. You're seeing partners of whatever flavor. Like, you know, I think the finals table, everyone was on partners except for Kenrith. And Kenrith kind of falls into that Najeela bucket where you're just playing five-color good stuff at this point. Like, you have the Dockside loop for Kenrith, but at the end of the day, like, you're breaching still, you're doing all the Grixis things, you're just adding those other colors more as support than your general game plan. And I'm really happy to start to see that, because that was one of the goals when we started Eminence, like, Zane and I especially, we're like, we are kind of tired of a lot of these online arguments, like, people being like, oh, you've never played against my random, you know, insert deck here, like, you don't understand the power level. And it's with more tournaments and more events coming, especially with the stakes that are on the line for Eminence events, I think you're going to start to see top 16s continue to look more like the Grixis piles and good partner stuff that is just the best thing to be doing in Commander.
I think the word meta was thrown a lot around like a year plus ago. And now we actually have a little bit more of a universal meta that we have in other formats. You can look at MTG Goldfish or MTG Top 8 and see the meta for any other format. And we're starting to get that for ourselves by having large tournaments with top 16s. You can actually look at their decks and build a meta based on that, decide what you're playing and know what you're going in against.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're seeing it even now with like the Twitter discussions that are happening and the like various tier lists that have come out. Like, I think Rebels tier list did a really good job explaining like just why these decks are as powerful as they are right now. And you're just starting to see the discourse change a lot to like, oh, this is my pep card, to people actually discussing like, you know, Sylvan Library, like the merits of Wanting Your Kick, and revisiting these cards that the community as a whole felt were really powerful for a long time. And now people are starting to question that. And I think it's really showing how the competitive mindset, now that there's more of an outlet, is really starting to sway opinions in the route of becoming more optimized and efficient. Legacy went through a lot of these growing pains too. And like, I think it was around like 2010-ish, like 2010 to 2015 or so, where it was a lot of people who were just bringing like their fun, like more casually oriented decks. And then as like a scene more developed, you saw people starting to gravitate towards, you know, things like Delver and Storm and things along those lines. And CDH is starting to go through the same transformation, I feel, especially now that there's more and more people actually trying to push and like solve the the format, for lack of a better word.
I think Popper is a really good example of like a format that started off fairly casually and fairly disconnected from deck to deck. And now it's kind of, only in recent years, I think it's really kind of become more streamlined as a format.
As a Popper player, 100% agree.
Yeah, I think there's like a good understanding of like what the strongest shells are. And now it's the debate, the forever unsolvable debate, in my opinion, of what the best supporting framework for those shells are.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice once we finally have sort of like the 60 card formats, when we have those established metas, and then can really see the decks kind of evolve to handle those specific metas, or what that looks like as kind of the holistic CDH evolves into a concise format. So kind of looking at the event internal, I know we talked a little bit now kind of what the meta looked like and preparedness for the event, but kind of I want to walk through, Ben, and get your take on your mindset when you're in the event. So like when you're playing the games, what are some good approaches or some tips you can give out to the listeners that kind of want to be looking to do well and noticing the positionings and different things like that?
I took Malcolm Timna, which is a deck I have a ton of experience with. So even though I didn't get that many games, it was definitely just like riding a bike. I just slid right into my comfortable seat and I got ready for my games. Within the games, I think a large portion of what I'm thinking about is how do I evaluate everyone's board state and hands? What do I expect? Like how many counters I expect from everyone? Who's going to try to win on their turn? And most importantly, are things getting better for me or worse for me? Because as a function of that, I can decide when I'm going to go for a win. And my best example of that is round one, where I saw that there was only one mana up to prevent me from winning. One person had a Lavinia, so free interaction was turned off. And so I really only have to deal with one counterspell. The person didn't pay for Esper Sentinel, so they probably have one. Every turn I wait, things are getting worse for me. They're drawing more cards than I am. So I get to my turn, and I'm roughly in my head think that he's maybe 70% to have a counterspell, but I see that it's not getting better. So I'm going to just try to win, and hopefully he didn't pay for Esper Sentinel to hold up board interaction like Chain of Vapor, or maybe a Worldly Tutor, or a Mystical Tutor, something like that. And so I go for my win, it ends up being countered, and that's the one round that I lost. But despite the fact that I lost that round, I still think I made the correct play, and it's really all a function of are things getting better for me or worse for me as the game progresses.
Yeah, that's a point I'm really glad Ben made, because I see this all the time when I'm playing games. So I tend to play like Grixis Pile, so obviously I'm trying to be a little bit more aggressive when I'm playing my games of Commander. But people will just call me crazy or whatever because I'm playing through like a fish or someone's Rhystic Study. But at the end of the day, like if I have my win and like two or three pieces of backup, even if they have Fish and Remora and some open mana, or Remora and Rhystic and some open mana, it's still the right time just to push through it, because these people are just going to bury you in advantage if you just keep waiting forever. Like your window's not increasing, it's just getting smaller and smaller each time you pass the turn. So sometimes you just have to push through and accept the risk. I think Ben is one of the better players I've met at doing this, because as he said, like, yes, like there was a good chance they had a counterspell, but like if I do nothing, they're drawing for their turn. They're drawing through Sentinel. If there's other value things on board, such as like a Thrasios or Winota, insert, you know, whatever flavor value engine you want to say, you're just going to get buried. And I think people are a little bit too passive. And you see this a lot in tournament play, especially with games going to time, or like when we had turns and turns going like 40 minutes, it's people just waiting for that perfect opportunity. But that's not how Magic works. Like, it's very rare that you just have that perfect window where things are wide open and you know the shields are down, unless you have like a Grand Abolisher out or something like that. So I think doing that cost risk analysis is really important, because yeah, sure, you might get stopped by the person with the Remora, but if they have no mana up, how many cards are you realistically playing around? It's like Mindbreak Trap, Pact of Negation, Force, the two Forces, and then if their commander's out, another two things. That's six cards in their 100 card deck. If you're only casting three or four spells to get your win off, that's pretty good odds for them to force them to have it. And I think people need to do that more often, where you just force your opponent to have it instead of thinking like, oh, they run Forcible in their deck, I get blown out by one counterspell, I just can't do anything right now. Because then you just end up keep passing the turn, and eventually decks that have value engines on board are just going to put you in the dirt and you're just never coming back.
I think a large portion of it is people mistaking majority and plurality. When I went for that win, I did not think I was going to win. I was going to try, and I was pretty sure that it would be countered. And so I think I was most likely to lose. But I think that the plurality of my chance, the biggest chance I would have of winning that game would be that turn.
Yeah, and like honestly, one of the things that, and Ben, you can maybe tack on this because I know you play many other games, but I think you also play on chess.com, and you could actually see that that bar, that graph on who's more likely to win on, I don't know if that's just on like Stockfish and stuff like that, but like that's kind of like when you're talking about the causality and everything like that, that's where my mind goes. It's like, what is going to increase my chances from being a 25% to win to 100%? And as the game shifts and progresses, you could kind of almost mentally see that happen throughout the game.
Yeah, I could definitely tell you, I watched a lot of the semifinals game where it was you with against the slicer player, and the turn you went for the win definitely felt like it was you were in a position of win, or Alana, who was immediately after you, was set up to win. So you kind of had to judge the, well, I have to go for it here, or my odds of winning decreased, you know, drastically in that sense.
Well, it was really funny how in that game, Alana had exactly the same hand as me, and we were both just ready to do the same play, and it was all a function of who the slicer player attacked.
Correct. It was funny. That was a treat where it was someone is dying and the other person is winning the game. Who is it going to be?
It's absolutely a fun way to think about it. I just looking at the chess advantage bar and trying to imagine it in your head. I know that even some SCG streams, they used to, or maybe it was Channel Fireball, they used to put advantage bars on their streams, and there's commentators would arbitrarily move it around based on what they evaluated the game as. Much harder to do with four players, though.
Oh, 100%. And it's kind of like one of those really neat things to kind of imagine and try and like figure out, like, if you're keeping track of everything perfectly, then you should know, hypothetically, within a reasonable window of error, what the odds are of you being able to combo out, to win, to do, et cetera, et cetera.
I think the moral of the story is not being results oriented with anything. Sometimes, well, especially in a four-player game, a lot of the time, the correct line, the best line, is not the one that ultimately is going to win every time. And you just have to accept that and learn from it and exactly think about, like, is this the best opportunity I have looking at the state of the game? In many cases, you make the correct choice and don't get the win, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting process that I think a lot of players can really learn to level up by kind of going through those metrics there. So kind of looking at the deck itself, Ben, Malcolm, Timna, I think you talked about this earlier, but you know, what made you pick Malcolm Timna as a deck for even going back into Punt City, and also to follow up, why is it the best deck in CDH?
I don't necessarily think it is the best deck in CDH, but it does a few things really well. And I think other players have not quite caught on to what it does well and how you're supposed to play against it. And it's deceptive because it's not always the best thing to actually shut me out of the game, because I am a very interactive deck. I am very... I will stop your opponents from winning for you. What the deck does well, I suppose I should start there, is it has both mana and cards in the command zone, which just sets you up for any game, because you have everything you could possibly want. You just play Malcolm, you play Timna, and now you have both mana and cards. And unlike a lot of other decks, with this mana advantage, you can store up mana for next turns and make use of all of your lands for all of your plays and still be holding up plenty of mana for everyone else's turns using the treasures you've made. And so this gives you a mana advantage every turn, even though it only looks like a mana advantage for one turn because you're making a treasure. So you have a lot of play and you're extremely versatile, and you have access to these white silence effects to make your wins very protected. And it fits my playstyle perfectly, which is why I chose it. I even have friends who have picked up the deck and told me they were unable to win with it. And maybe I'm going to be the next Wafo Tapa and play a deck that no one else can win with, but I can. And if that's the case, then I'm okay with that.
That's a deep pool.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Armix Krom. Like, everyone's just like, this deck just doesn't work if anyone else uses it. I was like, I don't know, I really like it. Let me be.
Let me do my thing, Mr. Armix Krom, Mr. Anala. So looking at Malcolm Timna, you're one of the primer authors for the deck, and I believe it's titled Mulling for Malcolm. And as you said earlier, you were the infamous Mull 2-1 in the Punt City. How important do you find that mulliganing is with the deck? Is it true to form to the name? Should you always be mulliganing to a turn one Malcolm?
So not quite always. I think that every deck in CDH should be mulliganing more. I think pros have said that for a long time for 60-card formats, and when you compare 60-card formats to CDH, there are like five or so reasons that you should mulligan way more. Matt Sperling wrote a great article about it on Eminence's website. But for Malcolm Timna specifically, mulling for Malcolm is the litmus test of the deck. That is your base. You should always look for that or something better. So it maybe you're putting mana into play and putting a Remora into play. That is better than a Malcolm. So you can accept that instead of a Malcolm. But at base level, the worst hand you should keep is a turn one Malcolm.
Interesting.
Those draw engine cards, the Rhystic Studies, the Esper Sentinels, and the Mystic Remoras are just cracked magic cards that I think more people should be mulliganing towards more aggressively.
Exactly. I mean, I should explain that the reason that I'm trying to get a Malcolm out so early is because the turn two of I already have a Malcolm in play, play Timna, attack with Malcolm, get your card draw already rolling, and hold up a treasure so that you have interaction for everyone else is just such a strong turn one, turn two, because it A, prepares you for everyone else's turn, and B, sets you up perfectly in for a long game or a short game. You have mana for everything. Also, the turn one Malcolm can be scary because two lands and Mana Crypt is ad nauseam mana on turn two. It doesn't look like it, but it is, because you just attack with Malcolm, get the fifth mana for a treasure, and you can ad nauseam as early as turn two.
That's just like a really unique thing that Malcolm in general does, because it just adds that extra mana rep. It's kind of like a pseudo mana dork almost in the command zone.
It is. It makes blue though, so it makes it a lot better.
Well, naturally, we've discussed many times green is bad.
So speaking on green being bad and looking at Malcolm Timna, which is Esper, I know one of the things that I'm a big proponent on, and I know Mikey is a big fan of the Grixis side of things. How was playing a deck without red? Red being kind of like ubiquitously one of the more powerful colors right now in the format, with things like Dockside and Underworld Breach and Deflecting Swad and so on.
So not playing red is definitely rough, and that's the biggest weakness of this deck by far. I think I kind of play with the like red at home cards, so instead of Dockside, I have Phantasmal Image copying other people's Docksides. Instead of Underworld Breach, I have Yawgmoth's Will, which can do powerful things. I also have Mnemonic Betrayal. So, it's definitely worse. No question. But it does give you a number of options that can pull their weight. And white is also a really powerful support color. And so far, it's been able to carry me far enough.
I respect the Yogg's Will. I was winning with that card before Breach existed.
I also want to bring attention to your sick maybe board that I'm looking at right now. You have Tetzamok, Primal Death, Shimmer Mirror. There's Bolas's Citadel, which is always just a really awesome card. I see a Cursed Totem in the Considering pile. There's a lot of really interesting pivots that this deck can make. I'm really interested in seeing how this updates over time.
Yeah, I have tried Bolas's Citadel and Shimmer lines, especially with Necroponents and doing some fun stuff there. It was powerful, but overall, I think the consistency of not playing them and just playing more tutors for what lines you already have tend to be a little bit more consistent and powerful. So those are not in the deck right now, but who knows, maybe something will change. And for the Tetzamok speaks for itself.
Oh my god, I can't escape this.
Mikey, do you have anything to say about that card?
I can't escape Tetzamok. It was a joke and it went too far.
Legendary Elder Dinosaur.
Dinosaurs are cool.
Joke? I don't know what joke you're talking about.
Yeah, the Tetsamox, the secret tech.
Looking at... talking about the main deck, Ben, would you say there's any changes you can think of on the horizon or anything off kilter after playing this event that you think you'd want to look at or change moving it going forward with the deck?
So going into the event, I think the one change I made was switching a Deadly Rollick into a Blue Blast. It ended up not mattering at all because the only thing I used Blue Blast on was a red creature being Slicer. So I think, that change was irrelevant and it ended up, but I would expect a little bit more Slicer going into more events. So I would probably play a little bit more removal. Who knows?
I think Slicer is an interesting topic that has a hot take on the community. Did you find that it was a real deck that needs respecting, or do you think it's going to be one of these flash in the pans that's going to kind of exist for a little while and then fade away?
It has some really interesting dynamics. It is so aggressive that it acts like a stacks piece because you have to spend your resources on surviving instead of setting up a win for your next turn. That's the angle in which it attacks. It's so aggressive that it doesn't let you set up your game plan. And it's a really interesting line of attack, and I expect it'll be tuned a little bit more, and we're going to see a little bit more of it. I am curious to see how it performs, but one unique aspect of it, and you don't see this with any other deck nearly, I can't think of anything, is it has one matchup that it absolutely cannot win. If the another deck is another person on this pod is playing this specific deck, it absolutely can't win, and that is a second Slicer. Because of the legend rule, whenever you're taking too much commander damage, you would just sack it and take the other person's Slicer, or the other Slicer player cannot give their Slicer to the player, but then it flips. It's just all of bad options. And Slicer just somehow, if you have two Slicer players in the pod, instead of them having a 50% chance to win collectively, I want to say it's near zero.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of self-intrudes itself.
Yeah, I think Slicer is 100% a real deck, because the issue with a lot of these stacks decks that people run is that they just can't really close out the game. I know Winota's a bit of an exception to that, because it just kind of breaks parity on every stacks piece just by dropping more things into play. But the fact that Slicer is literally just your game plan, we were just talking about Mulling for Malcolm, how your worst hand is Mulling is just your worst hand to be able to get Malcolm out turn one. It's like Slicer, that's all you care about is just getting the Slicer out turn one, and then the rest of your deck is just mana and stacks. And I think that's extremely powerful because it can just really take over the game, because if you start removing the Slicer, then you're not dealing with the stacks pieces. It gives them time to recast their Slicer because it's red. There's a ton of rituals. You can run the fast mana because you're not really running artifact hate. And I do think it's a real deck that people need to respect. And even if you don't even if you have removal, it's not hard for them to recast it again. It only starts at 3 mana. People are getting out Krom's turn one that are 5. So I definitely think it's a deck to look at going forward, and definitely making people think that I hope people have the big takeaway that they should be running more removal. And I don't even want to point to Slicer as this example. If you look at the top 4 pod, there is Teemer Pirates, another deck that you need removal for because it's kind of hard to counter creatures in this format. So that's another big deck that's popular at a lot of tournaments. The Rock Tevish deck, it's all about getting big fatties on the board that break parity on their stacks. If you're able to control their board and remove things, it has a lot much harder time doing that. And then Kenrith, once again, they have a lot of creature-based combos and things along those lines. So I've been saying this for a long time, that the Commander community as a whole doesn't respect removal enough, and I'm hoping that this tournament, that's a big takeaway people have for their deck building, that they need some more spot removal. Maybe run the Toxic Deluges, the Fiery Covenants, the Cyclonic Rifts, insert board wipe in your color, removal in your color, and I'm hoping to see some more of that going forward.
I think if you look at the semifinals game with the Slicer, you can see how they almost, they were very close to winning, and that was after I miscasted to counter a ritual that would have allowed the turn one Slicer. If you look at how much commander damage that we had when the game ended, and you add one more turn cycle of Slicer, we are all dead. So obviously the game would have played out differently, maybe we would have done things differently and stopped them, but at face value, it looks like we're dead. So this deck definitely needs a some modicum of respect. It is extremely powerful.
What's even more amazing is that the pilot did a pretty deep mulligan, I believe, and really didn't do anything besides put Slicer into play, and then basically sat back and watched everybody else scramble to try and deal with this card.
Yeah, imagine them with a good hand.
Yeah, like if they had a hand that had some more rituals or things in it, or like a stacks piece to follow up after the Slicer. It's just a, like, if you let it sit there, do its thing, everyone's dead. I think it's like 3 turn cycles or 4 turn cycles if there's no equipment on it. But that's not a long time if you're able to get this out turn one, because it's not hard to make 3 mana turn one, like, for any deck.
And, like, it kills people that fast, even if they're trying to survive by putting blockers and stuff. Like, I don't know how many times I chump blocked that game. I think it was 4 or something. It's insane.
The Abolisher to block was impressive.
It kind of reminds me of like the Legacy Mono Red Prison decks. It just puts a threat like a Goblin Rabble Master on the board and just says, I'm just going to kill you like this. Overwhelming advantage through a combat.
Yeah, exactly. Like, imagine if it was turn one Slicer and then turn two Trinisphere. Like, that's rough.
And I mean, in all honesty, it's not unfeasible. That doesn't sound like the correct word there, and the English language is terrible. It doesn't say
it's not feasible. It's not,
yeah, that word. Whatever he said.
Feasiblint.
Yeah, feasiblint. To have both of those happen on turn one, I mean, a Jeweled Lotus into a ritual effect, you know, or with a ritual effect on board. God, I'm losing it. You could do that easily on turn one to both of those.
Exactly. Like I said, people are dropping Kroms and bigger things turn one. It's so easy to do turn one Slicer followed by a Thorn of Amethyst, or, you know, insert stacks piece in your hand. Because like I said, the deck is just stacks, mana, couple equipments, and that's all you need. Slicer does all the work for you.
And like, the deck is only going to get better as people tune it. This is the first we've seen it on the scene.
Speaking of another deck that's kind of popped up in the same vein, I wanted to get your opinions on moving in. I know the West Coast crew is very passionate about this, but the other stacks deck that made top 4 of this event, the Roger Tevish Trinisphere Turbo Tax, whatever you want to call it, that stacks deck. How do we feel about that deck coming in? I know it had a couple of showings, and I know one player ended up getting the top cut, but where do we find that deck kind of falls into? Do we think that deck has some legs, or do we think that one is something that needs a little more refinement?
It does do some powerful things, and it can close the game decently, but with just the massive power level that are, like, its bombs that it polymorphs into play. It's definitely powerful. I think it attacked on the wrong angle in the game that we played. I don't know what his options were and what he could have done instead, but he put the he cast Rituals, drawing Vashra some cards, and Vashra was already threatening the win that we've been able to stall but not answer, and played the Void Winnower, which doesn't even stop the win and protects it even. So I didn't like how that last game was played. I was able to take advantage of it and win before Vasher could win, but I certainly couldn't stop Vasher when it got to his turn if we got there somehow.
Yeah, and I think we saw, like, in the post game as the stream was coming to a close, I believe Vasher had some, it looked like he had some pretty strong words for that player. I don't know what was said, but it looked like it was a little bit heated.
It was a tense table. I think even though we split the pot, I think everyone really wanted to be the winner. It's very exciting to be able to leave an event as the winner. And especially with the stream and a lot of long rounds over the course of 2 days, I think everyone was under a lot of pressure, and maybe that got to us a little bit.
Yeah, on the note of the Rock Tevish deck, I think, as Ben said, it can do some pretty powerful things, but in most of my examples going into the deck, like in even the semifinal round, like that round went on like 3-4 hours, it has a very, very hard time actually closing out the game. And I think that's a big detriment, because while it might be able to slow some stuff down early, it's also kind of struggles to really just finish, and giving people more turns just gives people more and more time to get out, especially when you're playing a stacks deck and you're kind of arch enemy at that point. Because it's like, who wants to be playing through a Trinisphere for the most part? Obviously, there's some exceptions, but you put a target on your head playing a stacks deck, and if you're just taking a really long time to actually finish the game, it doesn't really get you anywhere. And I think that's a very big detriment to it. And a lot of the cards that you're playing also like kind of become dead later on, because like you have all these rituals, because like the dream is to like drop a stacks piece or two turn one, or like get out an early Tevish. But then if you start, you just draw dead for a lot of large portion of the game, because those rituals get a lot worse when there's a Trinisphere in play, or you have your Thorn effects in play. So I think the deck's a little bit disjointed. It's obviously can do some powerful things. It obviously did well at this event, but I think that one is going to mostly stay to the West Coast crew, personally. I don't think that's when we're going to see like a wide adoption. I think it's going to be the people who are really passionate about it, keep working on it, but I don't think it's something to that is really going to be super prevalent in other events.
Yeah, and I think the reason I wanted to really bring this up too as well is I think when you're comparing both Slicer and this Rogue Tevish deck, which we can both kind of deem are stacks decks, the difference being is that this Rogue Tevish deck is trying to play for the insanely long game where the other players have the opportunity to kind of dig themselves out, where the Slicer deck is putting legitimate pressure on you to get solutions at a much faster rate or you will lose the game.
Exactly. Like turn one Slicer, that's already like a scary threat that needs to be addressed. Turn one Tevish, yeah, they might draw some cards, but like I'm not that concerned about turn one Tevish out of like any deck, honestly. It's like everyone's dropping Ristix, Remoras, Timnas, Chrom, Espers. Like there's so many draw engines, like that's not really not an uncommon thing to deal with from right from the get-go. But like the Slicer is just, it hits and there's an immediate impact and everyone needs to start to deal with it, and because if it gets out of hand, like you're just dead.
I do like thinking of Slicer as a stacks piece in a way where it puts so much pressure on you that you there's no option other than to answer it. Unless you have a win immediately, you are going to have to spend your resources surviving.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like it makes it so that you have to either win right away or deal with the Slicer, because you're not having the luxury of waiting for your window when there's a Slicer on the board.
Yeah. It's got to be terrifying if you're the only black deck in that pod.
It's actually interesting.
That'll be painful.
Yeah, the thing about that that's actually kind of interesting, though, is if, say, there's only one Grixis deck and then everyone else is playing, you know, other mid-rangey piles. If you focus the black player right away, it kind of hurts your own EV of winning, because then, for one, there's only two people trying to deal with the Slicer, and now the Slicer has to attack those two people. So if you eliminate someone from the game right away, it's actually bad. You need to be spreading across the damage. Because if Slicer only is attacking two players, you just increase their clock like exponentially, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's goaded.
Holistically, A should attack B, B should attack C, C should attack A. That way you can keep the damage at a minimum until you can kind of, as a table, resolve that problem.
Exactly. Because
we definitely had to do some of that during that semifinals game.
Yeah, exactly. Like in semifinals, if, say, Alana, I believe they were on TNK, if everyone just smashed Alana's face in and killed them on like turn two or turn three, however the math works out, now Ben and Ian are just getting whacked for six each turn. So that really it really puts more pressure on, because now also the Slicer player can pick someone to single out. And it just hurts your overall clock. You really do need to cooperate and spread the damage around, because if you just nuke one person from existence, now you just decrease the amount of time you have to win or deal with the Slicer. So it's really interesting that it puts the table into this dynamic for one thing that costs three mana. Like, that's just insane to me.
Yeah, I guess that's part of like the learning the deck part, is that you have your own play pattern with Slicer, and then you have to adapt to how everyone else in the pod uses him.
Mm-hmm.
And then as someone with a Slicer in your pod, as someone not playing Slicer, you may be running a deck that now can find advantages using the card. So now you're trying to, you have these other decks that don't normally have this aggression that now have access to it due to pod composition. That's just another layer of complexity in your average pod.
Exactly.
So with Silicon Dynasty kind of in the books, again, congratulations, Ben, for a well-deserved win. And, you know, thank you and congratulations to Mikey for running another very successful in-person CDH event. But we kind of want to know, like, what's next for each of you? What's the next events that you have coming up, Mikey, from a TO perspective, or that you're going to be playing in? And then, Ben, where can people see you competing in next?
So we're actually both from Philadelphia. So we're both going to be at MC Philly some amount. It's not a CDH event, but if you're there, maybe you'll see us. Who knows? That said, the next event for me will be Punt City 2. With them expanding the cap for that event with all the demands, I did secure myself a ticket, so now I'm really excited to try to defend my title now.
Oh, you weren't in the first, like, what, 63 minutes of ticket sellouts for that event?
I was on a plane. I had not landed yet.
Yeah, he had the audacity of flying to Silicon Dynasty. He missed out on the first wave. Oh.
How dare you open up during the flight times for your other event?
Yeah, right. Lessons learned. We did not expect it to sell out that fast. Ben's not the only one who missed it because they were flying and we're just like, oh, our bad.
I'll be honest with you. When that happened, so here's how it went for us here. Hey, Billy. Yeah, Chris. Punt City tickets are on sale. Oh, okay, that's nice. They're at 50%. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm buying mine now.
Yeah, it definitely snuck up on all of us. It's
too much of a good thing.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast that sold out. But yeah, as for me, I help run the Mox Masters tournaments that happen every month that Playing With Power is helping put on, so I'm involved with those. Punt City is going to be the big thing in March, doing a lot of work for that, as well as looking towards our other events that are happening this summer. And yeah, at this point, I don't really compete much in terms of Magic. I did a lot of competitive card games and competitive video games in high school, and I kind of just like burnt myself out and just don't really want to be back in those settings where I'm really trying to grind, because I'm someone who really, if I'm doing something, like, I can't like half-ass it, and I go really deep in the tank, as Chris and Billy and Ben definitely have seen, just with like all my little hobbies and things. Like when I got into watches, it wasn't like I just got one watch. It was like, okay, this is a thing that I'm doing. So I just don't want to go back into that grinder mentality. So I enjoy just running the events. I go to most things. Like, I'll be at Magic 30 as well as Ben, but you won't really see me competing in these events, mostly just playing friendly games.
I also will be at Magic 30. And yeah, we don't know anything about your hobbies. I mean, you should see your water collection.
Yeah, that's another one. I got into water, and next thing I know, I'm ordering cases from Europe.
That's
I respect it.
That is the Mikey way. So kind of thank you guys again for being here. With that, Billy does have some community questions. We did reach out to some members of the CDH community that kind of had their own question and answer that they wanted to kind of reach out to. So I will let Billy take it over.
All right, so here we go. We like to do this when we're interviewing people. So first thing is first, and this one comes from somebody that goes by they just wanted to say that Mikey and Ben are two of the most greatest people that they've known and consider them both family. This person wants Mikey specifically to stop hoarding the One Piece starters and gatekeeping the community. And they also want to know, what is the worst card game and why is it Hanabi, Ben?
Well, I have strong words to say with this person. Hanabi is a fucking amazing game, and that's definitely for sure where I got all of my CDH skill. So that, you heard it here first. Play Hanabi.
Ben actually has been tutoring me in Hanabi. I have two wins under my belt, both with Ben's excellent tutelage, and I can confirm it is a great game, and it makes you think on a different axis. So next one up, this one's from Hal. He wants to know, Ben, how RuneScape affected your CDH skill?
Okay. I'll be honest, probably negatively, because it took away all of the time that I was playing CDH. So you heard it here first, don't play RuneScape, even though it is very fun.
And Mikey, how has hoarding the One Piece starter decks helped you as a TO?
Yeah, I get so much flack from this, and our friend Manny does the same thing. I guess it's helped me because it's motivating me to want to try to run One Piece events at some point. So, you know, maybe there'll be some more events to be run where I can give them away as prizes.
Oh,
I'm down for that. Exciting.
I love this. Hold on. You piqued my interest. Let's go.
We'll see what happens. There's a lot of things that we're talking about internally on Eminence.
Love that. I mean, you could be like the first major, your first major CEDH events are on the East and West Coast right now. Why not be the first one for One Piece over here too?
Yeah, we'll see. There's a high demand for it, and it's a great game. I've really enjoyed jumping into it and building a bunch of different decks. It's just really cool getting in on the ground floor of a new card game, especially one that's as well thought out and designed as One Piece is.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, Chris plays it a lot. Chris got me into it. We're going to, by proxy, get Y into it. It's
do my best.
Actually one of the first card games since Magic that I'm like, yeah, I actually enjoy this a lot. I notoriously played Force of Will for a while, and I hated that game. And yeah, that's, we'll leave that on that. These next two things are more statements more than questions for you two. The first one's, well, actually, they're both from Zane. First thing he has to say is that you two are the OGs who are better at the game than pretty much everyone that he knows.
Ooh.
And
appreciate that.
This is a shout out from Zane to Mikey. At Silicon Dynasty, Mikey really held it down and helped me get a nice and much needed break, and he really appreciates it. And he did a lot, in all caps for the a lot.
That makes me feel good. One of the people that started Eminence with me, we were the two founding members, and he's been working his ass off on the software, and he's had a lot of random like life stuff come up. So at Silicon, I was like, you're on break mode. It's like, trust me, I'll handle it. You go relax. So I'm glad that he was able to appreciate the nice break, and he was able to interact with all of our friends and stuff while I was doing all the TO things. So love Zane. Great guy. Really glad that I met him at Vegas last year.
Yeah, and we love that. Like I said it earlier in the cast, I love the relationship that every one of you workers have, and workers, you're a little family. That's what you are. You really are a little family. And what family would be incomplete without a dad here? and we all know the CDH dad of the group. It's Mike Bonney. We interviewed him, and we actually had some comments from you guys before, and well, he's back for revenge, we'll say.
He's back for revenge, oh no.
Here is for Ben. Ben is one of the OGs for my entry into the format and is one of the smartest yet kindest people in the game. You always know when he is about to win because he gets so excited. He has a lot of love for that kid and considers him one of my own boys. An incredible talent and personality, and I always have a seat at my table for him.
Mike Bonney is really the nicest person ever. He lives by his name of CDH Dad, and he's just the best. I can't say anything more positive about him than, like, he's just the best.
Yeah, Eminence would not be successful without his support.
We were there literally, actually. No, I don't think, Chris, you were with us, but myself and Y were there for one of his first forays into the CDH space with DDM Gaming. We mentioned it in our other one when we interviewed him. Y actually won that event too, and interacting with him, and technically actually you as well, Ben, because I know you were there as well, but we just didn't know each other really that back then. He became one of the nicest people that I have ever interacted with on a personal level, and he's still to this day, like, you know, we could go for days, weeks, months without talking, he'll still pick up like we left off.
Just bring interaction.
Exactly. And then here's what he has to say about Mikey.
Oh, no.
Are you ready, Mikey?
I don't know.
Listen, I'm going to be completely real with you. Like, you almost made him cry when we interviewed him.
Yeah, that's why I'm not ready for this.
Yep. These two together brought a tear to my cold, dead heart and eye. But here we go. So he says, Mikey is the best son and business partner I could ever ask for. He is the yin to my yang, and I would be lost without him in many regards. He is wonderfully passionate and persistent person and defends his own with all he has. The boy is a great human. A world with him in it for anyone is infinitely better than a world without him.
Damn, Mike. What a guy. I love him. He's so good. Like, I literally, when I founded Eminence, I literally was like, hey, do you want to be my boss? And he's like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, I don't think this will work without you. And I stand by that. I don't think Eminence would be a fraction of what we've built with Mike wasn't the one leading the charge and helping us all stay organized.
I absolutely
love.
He is
definitely the most wholesome person on Twitter and real life, just in general.
I absolutely love the fact that you went to him and you're like, Mike, I need you to be my boss. You were just, for what you can provide as a dad and as a wholesome, general person, I just need you to help us out and be my boss. That's just so funny.
That's literally how it went. I was like, hey, I have some friends. We're starting up a new tournament group. I know you did DDM. Do you want to be our director? And he's like, what? Isn't this like your show? I was like, it's going to be our show. And the rest is history.
Bonney really has like that aura about him of like just lovable and wholesome person that will literally, like, you want a drink, he got you. You know, you need a shirt, he got you. Like that kind of thing. You know, mm-hmm. He will help you. And honestly, like, after interacting with all of you guys in different aspects and different times, I mean, I think the first time that I ever met you, Mikey, I mistakenly handed you my deck thinking you were Zane. and you're like, yeah, Chris, listen, I'm deaf in one ear. Chris said the guy that I heard the long hair, you had long hair, and he actually said dark hair. I don't know how I got those wires confused, but yeah, here we are today, and as I'm interviewing you here, yeah, I'm just dumb. Really what it boils down to. But honestly, like, I couldn't ask for a better experience than meeting you guys, even if it was just that one time, and meeting everybody else from the Eminence team. I've interacted with Max a lot, the head judge. I mean, since Punt City, I've interacted with a lot more of you guys. I mean, I even crashed at Mikey's Airbnb. Like, hey.
Yep, it's about just, you know, meeting up with people. That's why the events are so fun. Like, while the competition is the focal point, it's really just hanging out with people and just having the good vibes, making new friends, and glad I was able to come across you and Chris at the event, and now we're all pretty close, and Chris just is jealous of my One Piece collection. It's great.
I am very jealous. Yeah, he has doubled me in collection size.
Yeah, before this video started, he's like, how many of this one card do you have? I was like, I think about 30, and he's like, what? I thought I was going to get you on that one with my 10.
Not close, not close.
Nah, Chris will clap back in some
villain
way.
Origin story.
Yeah, literally, like, he'll clap back in some way.
I always do. I look forward to the rivalry.
Here's the thing. There's three things that are guaranteed in life. Death, taxes, and Chris trying to get the upper hand.
I'll be one step ahead of him, don't worry.
The endless struggle. all right, guys. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on here. While we kind of get into wrap up, we do have one final question that we do like to ask all of our guests as they come on. As we are a Commander and Coffee podcast, we do like to focus a little bit on the coffee or beverage side of it. So the last question for both of you is just a simple one. What's your favorite beverage?
I am going to be have to say that I'm really happy I wasn't kicked out. I'm not a fan of coffee. This podcast chose to drink a vanilla tea, and it was very, very good.
That sounds really nice, though. Yeah, no, we're not coffee snobs. We like to be educators when we can, but like, tea's great, water's great, even the spicy kind.
Even the spicy kind of water. That's my area of expertise. But yeah, I'd say my favorite drink, which is not the easiest to find because a lot of people mess it up, is iced matcha with oat milk. Very refreshing.
Yes.
And finding good matcha is a constant struggle. I feel like Jared can understand that as a fellow tea enjoyer. It's one of those things that when you get a good one, it hits so well, but most of them would just fall flat.
I treated myself to a matcha kit, actually, with a nice, like, wide stoneware piece, and then proceeded to use it 3 times, and now it sits on my shelf until I have the courage to try it again.
Yeah, it's difficult.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much. Again, guys, be sure to follow us at Commander and Coffee. We are on all of our social media platforms. Links to everything will be in the description down below. But before we wrap up, Ben, where can people find you if they want to talk to you more about Punt City or Malcolm Timna or the otherwise?
You can find me on Twitter at Ben Z Loeb. I'm sure you can find me. You can find me in various Discords. I don't know where. I'm probably by the same name. Yeah, thank you for having me on.
It was an absolute blast. Pleasure.
Yeah, one of the big things I know recently, just to help get you out there, in CDHU Discord, as soon as that happened, I never saw a commander get put up there as fast as Malcolm Timna did on there, and you were assigned as the instructor. As the mentor.
Yeah, that's right. So, if you have questions about the deck, definitely show up. I'll see if I can answer them.
Excellent stuff. How about you, Mikey? Where can people find you?
You can find me in the Eminence Discord. My handle is just MikeyJH72. I'm also in the Mox Masters Discord. If you have any TO questions, anything Eminence related, I'm also in the Command Tower Discord. That's our software. That's the best way to reach me. You also can reach us through reach me through the Eminence Twitter. It's a shared account by me, Mike, and Zane, but if a message comes through to me for me, I will respond, or one of them will point me in the right direction. I try to stay a little bit of a lower profile now on social media, but anything Eminence related, I'm there, and I'm happy to answer any TO questions or any questions you may have about decks I play, anything along those lines.
Excellent. Well, again, guys, thank you guys so much for being a part of it. Absolute blast to talk to you guys as always. Again, get listeners, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, reach out to us on the platforms. If not, give us a like and follow and click on the links below. Until next time, I'm Chris, joined with my two co-hosts, Billy and Jared, and we are all out of coffee. Peace.
I've been out of tea for a while now.
We did it.
I really hope Craig got that.
I didn't end it so yet.
That's actually how the whole "we're out of coffee" started. I was sitting there, I was drinking my coffee, and like we were finished recording, and I'm like, "Oh man, I'm out of coffee."
Love that as an exit. That's so good.